This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
And we're back. This is Geek Squawks, and my name is Jeff Sandhu, and it is actually the last proper Geek Squawks of the year, because next week we are doing an extended version. We're probably going to talk about some of the fails of 2017, some of the
some of our favorite stories of the year. Yeah,
the ridiculousness of 2017. Now, speaking of ridiculousness, we came across this story actually last week, and we wanted to talk about this very interesting space story, but I think because one of the stories that came out was saying that, you know, by the time we air this this chat that we have, it would have been updated because they may have some contact with this object. So I'm talking about, you may have seen this already, it's the Oumuamua, the mysterious oblong space rock which traveling from outside of our solar system. It's now creeped into our solar system and is traveling like, you know, some crazy speed, and it just looks like a really long oblong shape.
It's kind of like an unsharpened pencil.
Yeah. So the problem with it, though, I've been trying to find information about this Oumuamua. Some are saying that, you know, initially everyone thought it was a spaceship.
Yeah, people were saying it could be some form of alien life and sending out signals to see if they could activate what's inside. And, you know, Donald Trump saying, hello.
And this came right after, you know, I think there were researchers who've decided to, you know, instead of trying to hear messages from outer space, let's send message from outer space. And then this thing happened. So they thought, oh my God, there may be some correlation here. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we called and they came. Yeah.
If only life was as simple as that. But the problem with the Oumuamua is that everyone is reporting a completely different story into what it actually is. And me and Matt, we both kind of have a same kind of understanding of what this thing is. And I think if you go on...
Which is basically no understanding.
No understanding at all. So on NBC News and a lot of the legitimate news media outlets, they're reporting this is just as it's a comet in disguise. Yes, it came from the, you know, outside of our solar system. It's probably just made of ice, and you know, it has like a protective crust around it. Then it's just basically, you know, frozen things from outside of our solar system.
Yeah, there was one report I read that said probably the surface is a red color caused by space radiation, and that it absorbs something ridiculous like 90% of light. Yeah, I mean, its behavior is unique. It doesn't do things the way that we observe things from our own solar system. So it is a really fun and interesting thing to have wandering through our skies.
But the thing is, after like nearly 6 hours of astronomers interrogated this interstellar asteroid, when they had the chance to, most of them are actually, like, some astronomers are saying that, you know, it could just be nothing at all. Like,
well, this is the thing. I mean, we're looking at things with space telescopes, and a lot of people don't necessarily understand how space telescopes work. Mm-hmm. A space telescope is not a giant lens that you stare through. It is actually a bunch of radio waves and signals, and you're looking at, you know, this kind of distortion of data. You're not looking at pictures per se. So when they're sending things out, they're detecting by the way that things are reflected back. They're guessing what it's made of and how fast it's going. So it's actually quite incredible that we can do this over such amazing distances.
Crazy.
But at the same time, you can't expect to know for certain. We can only kind of guess what it is, because, you know, you're literally just bouncing something off it and saying, oh yeah, I think that's ice and carbon dioxide and a little bit of iron. You know,
it's a lot of guessing game at
this
point.
There's a lot of guessing games. And just, again, especially as it's come from outside the solar system and it's not behaving necessarily in the way that objects within our own solar system behave. So that kind of adds, a layer of complexity to doing this.
Yeah, so Wired magazine, they posted on their website saying that Oumuamua probably isn't a spaceship, but it could have passengers inside. And I was like, oh, it's a very interesting article. I think the Wired one kind of explains it the best. If you want the most truthful, check out Independent. They actually kind of went on full scientific about, you know, the solar system. Outside of our solar system is just probably wrapped in a very strange organic coat, apparently, to some scientists. And then Ars Technica has a very, like, you know, like, there's nothing to look here. Just move on. Let's just, you know, look ahead. But Daily Mail, you can always count on them in trying to, you know, obviously trying to, you know, get people to be overexcited over nothing.
Or just scared.
They came up with the headlines about the Oumuamua comet, saying that because the attempts to scan this mysterious Oumuamua comet, it may have awoken aliens' intelligence inside of it. And this is according to UFO experts. They've warned us. So, you know, there you go. Daily Mail doing a job for us.
I think if there's an alien intelligence that can build a ship that can wander from their solar system into ours, they're probably slightly more aware that we're out here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they've probably got something inside the ship that says proximity alert.
Yeah. Daily Mail, always. Now, let's move on to something down in the planet Earth itself. Apple, they're in hot water.
Yeah, there was a story earlier this week which was that companies that benchmark tests on phones were suggesting that older Apple devices, the phones particularly, are deliberately slowed down by the software as a way of smoothing out imperfections in the battery, the way the battery delivers power. Now, that was just speculation when the story broke, I think, on Monday or Tuesday. But on Wednesday, Apple actually admitted that they do use software to limit the device. So on the surface, it doesn't sound like such a bad thing, because apparently once the batteries start to deplete, they can deliver the power in ways that can actually damage your processor. Yep. So part of this is to limit the power demands of the processor so that the battery doesn't create these spikes that can cause the phone to short circuit or just power off. Of course, the other downside is that it slows your phone down because the processor isn't working. Yeah. And of course, we all get this thing about, especially when we update the operating system.
We feel it.
Yeah, the phone seems to be really slow. Mm. And that's when you start thinking about buying
a new
phone. Mm-hmm. So there's a really, really big gray area here in between actually protecting the device and forcing consumers into an upgrade cycle that they don't actually need. Because the benchmark companies found that if they just put a new battery into these older devices, the iPhone 6s and 7s, they were fine. They were back up to maximum performance again. Apple, of course, doesn't make it easy for you to change the batteries. You have to send it into one of their service centers, and it is very expensive to do. Yeah, it's you know, not like certainly the older generation of Samsung phones where you just whack the back off and you put
just take it off.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you just replace the battery yourself. So I kind of think that Apple's claims in this are not as straightforward as they seem, because if it was a very straightforward argument, why was Apple not telling us that our devices were being slowed down? Because if you just tell people and say, look, you know, after you've charged your phone more than 500 times, 500 charge cycles, it starts playing up a bit. You can either replace the battery, which will cost you, I think it's, you know, like $100 or whatever it is. You can either replace the battery, or you can accept the fact that the software upgrades are going to limit the performance of the phone.
Yeah.
But until Wednesday, that's not what Apple was doing. So they seem to have been caught on the wrong foot with this one.
You know, there was also one of the companies, Geekbench, who does all this, you know, cross-platform processor benchmark kind of thing on, you know, how this processor...
Yeah, that was the stuff that I didn't say, because there's just too many words in that.
So according to Geekbench, when they were testing it out, the iPhone 3G was capable of recording video, but was only launched in the iPhone 4. The iPhone 4S was capable of running Siri, but it was only launched in the iPhone 5 or something like that. So it and to me is like it always comes down to just Apple So Apple is one of those companies. They build the hardware, they build the software. They've got two teams running around. For the software guys, in a year, you may release 7 different updates in a year. Yeah. The hardware guys, they only have once a year that they could play around with this, right? So it's a lot of, I feel it's a lot of the software guys going up to the hardware. Listen, for the next year, this is our target. So they build a hardware that's capable enough to reach the next year's target. So hence, when the new phone comes out, they don't actually give you the full package inside of it because the Apple just feels, oh, you know what? I don't think all the users may want to use these features now. We're slowly going to keep moving up them. But the thing is, things change and software development changes. The way that we write code's different and hardware changes as well.
But also, it goes back to what I was saying in the Matt Splained episode for today as well, which is that we're far too passive when it comes to these things. You know, we allow these companies to do this to us. So it's not just Apple, Google, or whoever. You know, if the hardware on the phone is not up to running all of the new functions of the software, okay, that's fine. Yeah. But give us the opportunity to experiment. Don't just tell us this is all you can eat.
When was the last time Apple ever gave you an option, though?
No, but that's why I'm saying they don't give us an option because we don't actually tell them strongly enough. Yeah. And I think I'm wondering as well with the because we haven't seen the sales figures yet for the new iPhone 8 and the X.
They'll be now, buying though.
Well, it's very, very easy to buy an iPhone 10. Mm. Very, very easy. Usually for the first 6 months of an Apple release, it's really hard. And there are special offers going on with all of the telcos. It's very easy to get one. You can walk into any store and come out with one today. And that is extremely unusual for an iPhone.
And they have said that the iPhone 10 production side of things is actually not as much as the thing because they do have some limitations in the amount of iPhone 10s that they can actually produce.
Yeah, and there doesn't seem to be a shortage in demand.
And there doesn't seem to be a shortage
Shortage in supply.
So, it's a bit
weird. So it's going to be interesting to
see
what the
numbers are. Yeah, but I'm sure they'll come out and they will say great things again and they did really well with a completely new product and it surpassed when they will compare it to when the first time they launched the iPhone itself and they will say, oh, you know, because the iPhone 10 is going to be a new phone. You know how Apple is really good with their words.
Yeah, but
and good with our minds and our pockets too. But we're smarter than that, Apple.
Exactly, we can see through the numbers.
Yeah. Anyways, we'll go for a short break and when we come back, we'll do just a couple more stories, maybe 3 more stories, and then we'll have a Christmas Geek Tunes this time around. BFM 89.9.
Business, finance, and more. BFM 89.9.
And we're back with Geek Squawks, and let's start with Alibaba. They announced last week to do something in China that I never thought would actually happen because I only thought this would happen in movies. But it looks like it's going to come true because they have helped to seal a deal with Ford to sell electric vehicles in China through a vending machine. They're calling this the car vending machine. It's a futuristic building that looks like a gigantic version of something you'd find in a Toys R Us store. And it just looks weird. And why would you buy a car from a vending machine? I thought this would be in Japan of all places.
The whole thing is obviously a marketing gimmick. Yeah, it's not a way forward for selling cars. And especially when you look at all the terms and conditions that that actually apply with this story. Because, you know, if the idea is you can go up to the vending machine and you can borrow the car for 3 days for a test drive. Now, of course, there have to be limits on that, or else every single person in China would just change their car every 3 days.
I'll be so doing it,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'd have a BMW to, you know, a couple of days. Yeah. I'd have a Mercedes. I'd be trying the new Audi out. Yeah. You know, you do have to put limits on this. The automation running behind it, I can see that being quite useful, and that being the way that it's going to go forward in terms of buying cars in the future, that you could literally buy your car with an app,
you could find your finance.
You could find your financing. This delivering the car as a vending machine is just a bit. I mean,
it's to get people noticed about what they actually want to do, because the back end of it, that's the impressive part. Yeah.
But also, there's the thing with the vending machine. You know, you stand there, you put your dollar in the machine, and the little spiral goes round, and oh no, your packet of chocolates got stuck.
Yeah,
so you spend the next 5 minutes rocking the machine to try and get it loose. You can't do that with a car.
You can't do
if
that.
It gets stuck and you put your money in, oh no, I've just spent $30,000 and the car hasn't come out.
Yeah, so basically the process starts when a customer uses the Alibaba's Taobao app to scan a car that they want to test and potentially buy. So once the system recognizes the vehicle, it lets them pick a color. And once they enter basic information and they got to snap a selfie, they can arrange for a test drive if the vehicle is available or in the vending machine. The customer then heads over to the unmanned vending machine facility, showing their face, hence the earlier selfie. Their order is retrieved and the car is dispatched, and you get to test drive it for 3 days, after which you can buy the vehicle outright via the Taobao app, or you could arrange for a test drive of a different model, which is what I will do until I get caught that, you know, like, you can't test drive every single model every 3 days. But yeah,
I want an orange one today and a blue one tomorrow.
I just wasn't sure what color would look good in driving to work, right? Yeah, I would just create multiple excuses for that. There is some positivity in 2018, because it could be the year where we don't have to worry about smashing our screens anymore.
Yeah, there's a report. I think it's in a lot of countries, it's up to 20 or 30% of phones in the market actually have a damaged screen. Yeah. And, you know, you can see that when you're out with your friends and there's
always one guy.
At least
with
one.
With
the shattered phone, right. But what we now have is a bunch of technology. We had a story earlier this year where we talked about rubber and plastic that could actually be self-healing. Now, a guy called Professor Takuzo Ida from the University of Tokyo, he has come up with this healable glass. Mm. So what happens is it's called polyether theorius. Mm-hmm. And when you press the plastic together with your hand, it will actually cause the molecules to kind of reform and go back together. So what happened was someone was originally trying to come up with a new glue, and they found that when this thing hardened, this polymer that that the glue was made of, when it hardened, you could actually reform it, and any cracks that were in the material would just disappear. The interesting thing about this is that it isn't heat intensive, so it is something you can do in your home. You don't have to send it to a repair shop. I think it operates at 21 degrees centigrade, so that's, you know, well, that's significantly lower temperature than most than the average day in Malaysia. So it would be very easy for us to repair any of these screens. Companies have had things in the past. I think LG had a phone
like
that had a self-healing thing
scratch,
on the back.
Yeah, you could remove the scratch by just, you know, rub. Yeah, yeah. Mm.
But when you have phones, for example, like Apple's iPhone X, which have glass on the front and glass on the back, and are potentially very expensive to replace.
Oh, yeah.
This could actually help to make our phones last a lot longer. Mm. And it could also mean that we really can start to look at kind of modular phones where you can just swap out, you know, put a more powerful processor in, or put a better spec'd battery in. We don't necessarily have to throw away the cases and everything else now, because everything will be a lot more durable and last a lot longer. Mm.
I don't see Apple actually probably doing something like this in any of the near future, because they'll be like, no, you can't do it. We will do it for you.
Well, again, I think this is something that once the technology is there, I mean, you know, you think of all the other applications. Oh, you could have the applications in cars. You could use it in Windows in your home as well.
It'd be amazing.
There's a lot of applications for this. Watch screens. So once this stuff becomes ubiquitous, then companies like Apple have to start using
it. They've got to get into it. But it's really cool, because, you know, it saves you a lot of money if your screen will never break again. Because apparently if you drop the new iPhone X and if the back of it shatters, that's the end of your phone. Because the whole motherboard is like attached to the glass back itself. And yeah, it's like you might as well just buy a new phone kind of thing. So that's really expensive. Anyways, Facebook, they've had a very rough year in 2017. And I don't see how in 2018, it will be any easier for them. Data privacy has been like one of the hot topics of the year as well. And now it seems like the several new features that the company have announced, which is revolving around facial recognition features, it seems like Facebook is again pushing the limits of to what we want. And it goes back to your point again of, you know, us taking control of our data.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this also kind of goes to what we were saying in this week's Matt Splained, that if you are paying to use a service like Facebook, then a company having control over something like taking your face as part of your identification, that makes sense because you still control and own all of the data. Yeah. But allowing a company like Facebook to own your image is very dangerous because, as we know, companies like Facebook work with law enforcement agencies, and we are now starting to see the first very powerful facial tracking software. Mm. So again, you're giving for no reason and for no money, you're giving a company like Facebook the means to then set up a surveillance system where you can be identified wherever you appear on a camera.
Yeah, so basically this new face recognition feature, it's just a simple on-off switch button. And, you know, they explain to you what these new features will do. And it may sound like, it may come in handy. So basically Facebook will alert you when photos of you are uploaded, even if you haven't been tagged in them. This happens if you aren't friends with the person who uploaded the person, as long as you're included in the audience group specific to the uploader's privacy setting. So if it's public, you would get a notification if a random person uploads a photo of you. Sounds good so far. The second one is that Facebook will alert you if your face is included in a profile picture. And, you know, that's like either identity theft or someone is, you know,
phishing,
and, and all those kind of stuff. And then also, finally, visually impaired users can now hear aloud of who's tagged in the photos alongside them. But the problem with this, though, is you have to authorize Facebook the access and store all of the faces that the recognition softwares and data and patterns that you have existing in your photos. You have to give Facebook the permission to store them and do whatever they want to do with that photo. Yeah. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do that.
No, and I mean, that's why it goes back to what I said. If we have a relationship with them that's very simple, that we pay them money, and we ultimately have control over what is done with that data, then that relationship becomes a lot more straightforward. Mm. As we know, Facebook uses all of the information and data to generate money because we're not paying them to use Facebook. So no, I would not be comfortable giving them access to my image. Because again, I don't really have pictures of myself on my Facebook profile at all.
You can't find any annotation on Facebook.
The only places you can find pictures of me are actually the BFM website, which I do almost on pain of death.
Now, sticking with Facebook, though, they have somewhat saved us from like the end of society itself, because they announced together with Facebook, with Microsoft, they took a joint action to disrupt the activities of a persistent advanced threat group commonly referred to as Zinc or the Lazarus Group, which a lot of people are saying they basically are North Korean hackers attempting to sort of, you know, hack into victims and a whole bunch of like people and disrupt relationships and stuff like that. So they've done something good, but they've also done a lot of things that is questionable this year. So
it's nice to see the pro action, and I don't think we should always be saying negative things about all of these companies. But at the same time, you know, in a sense, we are putting them in that situation. We are saying to Facebook, you have to do all this weird stuff in order to make money because we're not giving you any.
Yeah.
So for me, it's just easier to give you money, don't do the weird stuff, and let me own my stuff. Mm.
Basically, what Facebook did was they shut down the operators. They deleted the accounts that are operated by this group, and they just make it harder for them to conduct their activities. So it's not like a rocket science thing that Facebook's done. They've shut down accounts of, you know, individuals who were not found guilty of doing anything just by accidentally deleting their profiles, right? So anyways, that's enough about Facebook. Let's just move on to geek tunes, Matt. Christmassy tunes?
Yeah, well, usually at Christmas, the last few years, I've played the same track over and over again. Emmy the Great and Tim Wheeler's Home for the Holidays Again. But I'm breaking from that tradition this year. I'm going with something that's a lot more seasonal. We're going with Frosty the Snowman by the Cocteau Twins.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.